I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Hello and welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official podcast for the UK Seahawkers. As we turn the first quarter of the season into week two, I am, all as always, one of the trio of hosts, Stuart Court. And as ever, I am joined by the Gary Gilliam of the podcast. That's a good thing, I promise. Ross Bell, and frantically posting nano bubbles recovery water into Google, and to Russell Wilson, it is Adam Nathan. How are we, chaps?
Good, mate. I'm better than the season's finally here.
Yeah, well.
if you asked me that Sunday, very different response.
Yeah. If you asked that about half 10 on Sunday, it would have been off.
Yeah.
Adam, how are we?
Not too bad. Gradually recovering from Sunday for a number of reasons. we're doing well, thank you.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, the hangovers you get older turns up later in the day, I've found. Before we look into what was a very, very gnarly season opener this past Sunday against the Dolphins, from sprained ankles to Earl Thomas's interesting day, as well as everything coming this weekend at the LA Coliseum versus the Los Angeles Rams. There's just a few quick notes. First off, a massive thanks to everyone who tweeted, posted on Facebook and used the hashtag #DrinkForSmudge. That's drink, not anything else. On Sunday evening, it was firing my phone off at a frenetic rate with all the tweets and posts. I'm sure Ian would have enjoyed it looking down from on his perch. Speaking for a few others, the place and company I kept to watch that game would not have happened without Ian's work on the group and on Facebook and getting the message spread that how much of a fantastic time you could have in Seattle. So thanks to him for that and to everyone who got in the right spirit, literally. Now, on to some VMAT notes. Jermaine Ifedi's NFL debut will have to wait as an ankle sprain, go figure, looks to be keeping him out of this past week and the next couple too. More on that injury later, but also there were a few moves made since we last convened, mainly focusing on the practice squad, with Antoine Goodley and my boy Ty Smith returning to the team over the weekend. Yesterday saw some very surprising moves made and one very much less surprising move. Cornerback Tharald Simon was waived outright after missing the week one game with a sore knee. He is another just not able to get or stay healthy, a la Jordan Hill. That's the case, right, Russ?
He's had numerous injuries and maybe it's a case of go and try somewhere else for a little bit, and if you can stay healthy, or maybe get yourself healthy and then come back.
Yeah, he posted a few tweets last week about feeling like he doesn't belong and things like that.
So,
Adam, Tharald Simon?
Unfortunately, the two things that are synonymous with Tharald Simon's Seahawks career are injuries and penalties. It's clearly a bit. I generally do think there's a good player in there, and I wonder if him just being able to go away, not being on a team, and just recover for a whole year might put him in a better spot than he has been in the last couple of years, when he's always sort of had a target to come back to and play for the team. He can now take a year, get ready, and hopefully he'll be back on a team. Hey, hopefully it'll even be us by training camp next year.
Yeah, I think obviously we're recording before the waiver claims are processed, so by the time you listen to this, he might be a New Orleans Saint for all we know. it's disappointing because the way that Earl Thomas and Sherman and all the coaches have talked about him for the last 18 months or so, it's been really encouraging and exciting. And as you say, Adam, he just hasn't looked it when he's had the opportunity. Obviously, he got picked on by Tom Brady in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. But we'll wait and see what happens either later today, later in the week, and further on down the road. His roster spot was taken by former Raiders cornerback Nako Thorpe. Thorpe played against the Seahawks 2 weeks ago in the preseason closer. Also moved on were Kayson Williams, Rodney Smith and Justin Hamilton, yet again, off of the practice squad and are now free agents. Quarterback Jake Heath, defensive lineman Tyler Harris and offensive lineman Michael Ola were signed in their place. The unsurprising move of the lot came with Tani Tupu being cut to make way for the again-returning Will Tukuafu. He's back, as Adam predicted last week. Adam?
Just a sage, Stu, what can I say? I see these things coming. You know, I'm in cahoots with the guys. So, Yeah, hot take. Hot take, Nathan. That's me from now on.
but as you said last week with the contract stuff, that is clearly what the reasoning was behind them. They clearly thought Tupu could get through week one, and then you bring someone with more familiarity back into the fold.
Yeah, right. Tupu was pretty poor, to be honest. I don't think he really offered much of a push in the running game.
No.
Didn't look that great. It was basically like not having a fullback, to be honest. He might be a decent player, but you know what you get with Will, and they clearly like him, so good to have him back.
Yeah, he's now had more returns than Brett Favre at this point. to Seattle, anyway. Week one, then. It's in the books, and the Seahawks escaped with a win, just. A turgid offensive performance nearly spoiled a spectacular showing from most of the defensive unit before the Seahawks took the ball over in the 25 after the Dolphins had took a 10-6 lead. 13 plays and 70-odd yards later, this happened.
Second down and goal from the 2, no gain. Kristen Michael play fake. Little alley-oop pass in the back corner. Get Dolan! Touchdown Seahawks, but he might have pushed off. There's a flag in the end zone. Let's see.
There is no foul for defensive.
No foul! Touchdown Seahawks!
That Rabel excitement, worry, excitement, pitch perfect, just encapsulates it all in those few seconds between the catch and the ref's call, doesn't it, Ross?
Yes. I was watching this with my wife, and when she saw the flag, she was like, oh, no, not another one. I just said, just chill. There was no reason why that flag was thrown. We were 2 yards from the end zone. Baldwin didn't touch anyone. Kearse was trying to engage and looked like he might have done, but it was never going to be an upheld flag. So, yeah, it was a lovely way to end the game.
Yeah, well, 90% of the room, me and Adam were in, were going mad. Me and Adam were like, no, it's a flag. And there is a video on Facebook of the reaction to it all. I was on my haunches through the drama and probably the mix of chocolate cake I'd had for the 3 hours before. But yeah, it really didn't help. If you listen back to if you watch it back on condensed, I think it's Dan Fouts, the CBS commentator, absolutely makes a hash of it. He's straight away saying it's offensive PI. And
yeah,
like,
it's coming back.
Calm down, mate. Calm down. Don't do us like that. Adam,
it was stressful enough as it was. Then you get the touchdown. Blood pressure hits about 965,000 trillion. Then, oh, no, it's a clear pick play. So now I'm just furious. It's up even more. And then you get a double celebration. So, yeah, I mean, my internal organ's probably like one of those fairground games where someone whacks a hammer and sends the thing all the way to the top. I think I probably took the top off of that quite comfortably. But a really good moment. And I've missed that feeling of a touchdown. These 9 month off seasons are just too long.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, week one, we've probably got 19 more weeks of that, hopefully. So, after the touchdown and subsequent blocked extra point, the Dolphins did have somewhat of a sniff to get back in field goal range, but Cliff Avril shut that door emphatically.
At the 9 yard line, the shotgun snap. Tannehill awaits. He gets it. 4-man rush. He goes down in the end zone. The ball game is over. Cliff Avril.
So the Seahawks survive. Win out 12-10. 1-0 is all that counts. But that was not what you'd call a statement, Adam.
No, it wasn't great. But what opening game or opening month for the Seahawks in the last 3 or 4 years could you necessarily say has been great? We know we're playing a lottery with the offensive line, and we're probably not going to face too many better defensive lines than that. Good to get them out of the way. And as a famous man asked me on Sunday night a number of times between 1 and 3 a.m., did the Seahawks win? Yeah, Seahawks won. And to not be behind the eight ball at this stage of the season as we were last year and not playing catch-up, I don't think we had a winning record until week 7 last year. So just to get 1-0, a game away from Arizona, a game away from Carolina, you can moan all you want in the aftermath, but a win is a win is a win at this stage.
Yeah, most definitely. Ross?
Yes, like you said, this time last season I was feeling fairly depressed because we just lost to the Rams, but yeah, it's nice to be a game up on those two teams already. 49ers fans will make you believe that they're a serious threat this year, but they can get back in their box soon. And yeah, it's just good. It was a tough game to get through, but it finished nicely.
Yeah, most definitely. But also with the Niners, they did put a shellac in on the Vikings in week one last year. Look how
exactly
seasons ended up. So going a bit more in depth, Ross, who's shone for you on offense?
On offense, Christian Michael, I think, was the one, the main one. He, every time he got the ball, he was looking to just hit that hole and power through. It wasn't working massively through the middle, as I think someone pointed out on our Facebook group or in our chat. It was working better when he was trying to bust outside, but he was taking it to those big boys up front, and he looked good. I think he looked better than Rules overall, personally.
Yeah, I think with me and Michael on Sunday, I think it looked better when I watched it back, because I was the opposite. I thought Rules looked... It just looked better, looked sharper when Rules ran the ball, but watch it back, it kind of was more of a 50-50 kind of deal. Adam, anyone for you on offense?
Doug Baldwin is just an absolute man. I mean, I think he set a reception record for himself. Was that nine receptions? And he just doesn't drop anything that matters. Like, I've been watching Hard Knocks, and it's so funny seeing these guys, these young receivers, just hauling in passes in practice, and they get to their game, and that's just a preseason game, and they're dropping it because they're getting nervous.
Mm.
The stones on Doug Baldwin are just unbelievable, and he's up there with the top five or six guys. He may not be as flashy, and he may not make the plays that like an Odell Beckham or Antonio Brown do, but in terms of importance and reliability, the guy is just money.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think Doug Baldwin, it must be the quietest 9-catch, 92-yard day, one touchdown that anyone's ever had. That kind of surprised me when I saw it yesterday. I was watching this thing that he did with Deion Sanders. With that offense performance, still get nearly 100-yard receiver is something. He is, as you say, he's just absolute. Just goes about his business. You're not really surprised by what he does at this point.
No.
Elsewhere for me, I think the O-line started off okay. Gradually got worse. I think the two main culprits were the two newbies, the two outside free agent acquisitions with Sol and Jamarcus, where Bradley Sol just... I mean, I think he improved as the fourth quarter, but the first half of Bradley Sol... Nathan Ernst on Twitter's highlighted quite a few spots where he just looks lost. So that's something that's obviously going to have to be improved upon. Jamarcus Webb, we can put a Ndamukong Suh asterisk next to his performance. But when he went up against Andre Branch, I think it was, he did look more than competent. And obviously in the run game, both of them were really big on the 4th-and-1 Christian Michael run. Anyone on defense, Adam?
Deshaun Shedd and Jeremy Lane, I thought, were excellent. And I think it's really nice that we've got those positions locked down. I think we said earlier in the year we weren't sure who was going to play where, but I think it's pretty clear now that Shedd has got the body size to be a right cornerback, and Lane just works as a nickel guy. But someone who's not going to get spoken about that much is Richard Sherman. And I think we're almost at a stage where he is so good that he is now underrated. I know that sounds ridiculous, but Jarvis Landry set a reception record in the NFL for the first 2 years of his career. No one in the first 2 years caught more passes than Jarvis Landry. Sherman just trailed him, from what I could tell, and the guy didn't have a sniff. He's just a brilliant, brilliant cornerback. And the guys in the front always say that if they can give us some time in the secondary, we can do our job up front. And honestly, I'm almost at the point of saying, well, if I had to keep one defensive guy, I would make it Sherman. I think he's just indispensable.
Yeah, most definitely. I think when you saw Landry with the ball, it was quite clearly manufactured by Adam Gase and the Dolphins coaches that they got him away from Sherman. They obviously run pick routes, or they got him in space on screens and stuff. But when it was just one-on-one, Sherman had him.
Yeah, Landry's biggest catch, he came all the way across the field, didn't he?
Yeah, and then he caught it like a yard off the line of scrimmage, and ran yards after catch blocks and stuff. But yeah, Sherman was fun. Deshaun Shedd to be the Pro Football Focus number one graded cornerback for the week was that'd have been some bingo to get that if you predicted that in week one. He gave up just 3 yards receiving, so that is, you know, the one if not two really impressive pass breakups as well. Anyone for you on defense, Ross?
Well, Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett, I thought they were constantly getting pressure on Tannehill when they were not being told to like pull off like Jaron Reed was. But I can't remember his name now. Bobby Wagner. Sorry, Bobby. Oh, that's a really bad move by my part. When he was told to blitz, he found the gap in that line every single time. Tannehill must have been having nightmares the night of that game, just seeing Bobby Wagner in his face.
Yeah, I think Avril was great. I mean, the closing defense for it's a long shot they were going to score. The last two plays for the defense, where they just went pinned their ears back and went at it, was really, really, especially Avril, absolutely diced with the O line. For me, it was more of a worry elsewhere to the other guys. With little Thomas, I'm not quite sure what he was distracted by, but he was not. He missed two tackles. Obviously, he let Kenny Stills have half a century link field to himself, which he. Thankfully, Kenny Stills managed to somehow drop.
Yeah, that's incredible.
It was overthrown as well. But I think Earl Thomas, hopefully that's just an anomaly and he returns to the Earl Thomas we've seen for the last 6-7 years next week in LA. Elsewhere, I think Frank Clark, Jaron Reed were immense. I think if you go back and watch all the run plays when the Dolphins tried to run in the middle, Jaron Reed is nearly immovable. For a first game, for a guy who was coming to the game with a bit of doubt over his health, to look how good he did in his first NFL sniff was really, really impressive. And obviously, you got Cam blowing up a fourth down as well. So, defense overall was absolutely sensational for the most part. I think they give the offense a chance, and the offense eventually took that opportunity with both hands.
Chris Richard probably deserves a bit of credit as well. I guess with a minute or so to go, they could have gone preventative defense, sat off and just tried to stop the pass. But letting the guys blitz, I mean, that last play is almost arousing. It looks so good with Avril coming through the gap and cleaning out Tannehill. It's just beautiful to watch.
The play before that as well, Cassius Marsh, literally Superman flying through the air, knocked that ball out of Tannehill's hand.
Yeah, literally laid out.
Yeah.
It was quite impressive. It's all about effort. Obviously, the run day, but obviously another thing coming out of the game was the health of Russell Wilson. It's probably the biggest issue we've had with him, apart from his nanobubble concussion. Pete was asked about how his quarterback was on Monday, and here's what he has to say.
He's pretty good. He's not in the boot. He's walking around, and he's practicing on Wednesday, and he's planning on playing, and we'll see how it goes.
Do you see there being any impact with Wilson this week, Adam?
Ooh, that's a good question. It's not the team that I'd want to play against with a guy with a dodgy ankle, especially because Greg Williams, you know, nothing would make him happier than have one of his guys put a deliberate hit out on Wilson's ankle. That's just in Williams' makeup. So that worries me a bit. But ultimately, Wilson's probably going to play for the Seahawks for hopefully 10-plus years. And I guess the performance we're going to see from Wilson on Sunday is what we're going to see from him in around 8 or 9 years' time. And as long as that line can hold up, he's good enough to stand in the pocket and dice a team like the Rams.
Yeah, most definitely. Because the 49ers put 28 points on that defense, so you could expect that with the offensive power that we seem to have on the team and on the paper, that you'd be able to dice them, as you say, just standing there. Ross, impact?
Yeah, hopefully not. I've got a little bit of a vision that the first play, Quinn and Donald, if he's on the field, are going to break through that line and Wilson's just going to roll out and just run for 20, 30 yards and just prove to everyone that it's not a problem. It's been blown out of proportion by the media because it's Russell Wilson and he'll be fine. And he looked fairly mobile on that final drive against the Dolphins. He was picking up some yards, bursting through the middle. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, it's a 13-play, 75-yard drive on one leg is quite impressive, even for Russell Wilson.
But the worry for me, Stu, is that he's not always going to be okay after one of these hits. Like, eventually, if we keep playing with fire with this, we're going to get burned badly. And, you know, it's tricky because you've got so many good players being paid in all positions. But I think there's 20 teams in the NFL who are paying their offensive line at least double what we're paying ours. And ultimately, you know, it's not like we are just inventing these players or, you know, breeding robots in the VMAC. They're not that great players. And unfortunately, obviously it's great that Wilson's going to be fine, but there's going to be a time where he's not fine after one of these.
Yeah.
And it does worry me that we're just playing such a lottery with basically your number one asset and your whole team. I mean, look at the people that we could have bought in as a veteran. The thing is just a disaster.
But at the same time as the lottery, you've got the Dallas Cowboys with what is regarded the best offensive line in the league, and look at their quarterback currently. So it is one of those where you either get or you get got kind of thing. So would it be smarter for you, Adam, to sit him, or is that just far too counterproductive?
No. You have to treat him like a veteran, and he has to be, well, in conjunction with the medical team, he has to make a professional decision and not put week two ahead of weeks 3-17.
Yeah.
But, I mean, all signs point to him that he's going to be fine. And, you know, this is really a game we could do with winning. You know, if he's good to go, it's not for me to tell him not to play, that's for sure.
Yeah, most definitely. Ross, anything else for you on the game?
I just want to quick mention the special teams. They were outstanding for, well, every time they're on the field. Some of the hits that Marsh and I can't remember the other guy's name were putting on their returner, he was looking terrified to actually do anything but fair catch that ball towards the end of that game.
That hit from Cassius Marsh was, it was like he's encapsulated the spirit of Ricardo Lockett a few years ago and Michael James. So, but yeah, anything else for you, Adam?
Tyler Lockett is going to be a sensational player, no doubt about that. But when I'm talking about the stones of someone like a Baldwin who will catch the big catches, I mean, we shouldn't breeze over the fact that he had a 22-yard catch on fourth down on that touchdown drive, which is arguably as big as the touchdown itself. Lockett had two or three quite bad drops, and he is rightly getting a lot of hype around the league and in Seattle, but we just need him to hold on to that, because that's what's going to separate him being a good and a great player for me.
Didn't he just catch bubble screens all day, basically?
Yeah, there was a couple come off his hands. I think one of the drops, which is going to be good as a drop because it wasn't a fumble, was a fantastic play by Byron Maxwell, which is probably one reason he got paid so much money as he did last year.
Mm.
I think that's far much more on how Maxwell played that than what Tyler Lockett did. But yeah, there was a few interesting hands catches or lack of catches. But Lockett's ceiling is non-existent, so I'll take that as an anomaly, just like Earl Thomas for me. Ross, Tyler?
Yeah, the catches he did make, they're all short passes. I think he had six catches for about 17 yards, which is not what we've come to expect from him. But we didn't really test them deep at all, which is, I mean, that's Lockett's game, isn't it? Getting over the top and getting behind and getting in, that's what he's on our team for.
Yeah, and that's something that Pete noted on Monday as well, because we didn't have any explosive plays or any sniff of an explosive play, which is what they look for, and they gauge how the offense is moving on all those offensive
plays.
But
I suppose you need time in the pocket to make those plays happen, or completely broken down plays, and Wilson couldn't move, so...
Yeah, definitely. Right, with that game and mess out of the way, the team now move on to go to LA to face the Rams. Where at, Ross?
That silly little stadium in LA.
As for the Rams, it looked all very familiar and very hilarious from the Jeff Fisher coach team as they went down 28-0 to the admittedly very, very bad 49ers. Let's hope he's a lifer for the Rams anyway. It's a very, very bad way to start. Aaron Donald was ejected for some swinging punches and, I don't know.
Can he be suspended for that for a week? That'd be nice.
I hope so, but I don't.
Probably in week three he'll get a suspension for that, knowing how that.
Yeah. Gurley was working up a mountainside, and Case Keenum beating out Jared Goff so clearly was more glaringly worrying for Jared Goff more than Case Keenum, as the snaps and the game progressed. So this weekend, what do you expect to see this weekend from the Seahawks, Adam?
From the Seahawks, I expect to see the good stuff from last week improved on. So I'm expecting to see another good defensive performance. I would be disappointed if we needed more than 17 points to win this game, despite the fact there's obviously a fanfare of it being their first game in that lovely, silly little stadium. And then in terms of the offense, you would hope that more reps in the week can create a bit more space for Wilson and just a bit more of a smooth offensive game.
Yeah, definitely. Ross?
Yeah, their secondary looked appalling against the Niners' completely terrible wide receiver group. So I'm looking for big games and big chunk plays from Baldwin and Lockett especially. But he said, Pete said this week, that they're going to work rules more into the rotation. So probably quite a strong run game, I suspect. Just try and take it to those big guys up front. But yeah, it's hopefully just some more points, really, because it's getting a bit depressing playing these Rams in really tight games.
Yeah,
I have to say one thing, and I'm sorry, Rosk, I'm going to give you extra production work here.
Catfish!
Rams. I mean, these guys, they only bother raising themselves for two games a year.
Yeah.
Really, really annoying. And you want to win every game, but I'm so fed up of losing to these no marks.
Yeah.
Just try twice a year, that I just want to win this one so badly. And I'm fairly sure that view's echoed a lot around Seahawks fans, because we owe these guys not one, we owe these three or four.
Yeah,
we definitely owe these another 28-58 nil shutout, whatever. Because it's just, as you say, Adam, it's just ridiculous how they look for 2 weeks of the season, and now you watch their game on Monday and how anemic every part of that team looked, apart from Todd Gurley trying to run through a brick wall.
Yeah, I feel a bit sorry for that, man.
It is about time. Any improvements needed from certain players, Russ?
Well, most of the offensive line. I think Glowinski played well in parts of that game. He got bullied on one play where he almost, he caused a fumble and could have injured Wilson a bit more by being pushed back into his legs. But yeah, Gilliam played okay, but Mary Williams beat him quite a bit as well, so he needs to improve. And left tackle could be an issue going forward if Quinn's trying to just breeze past Sowell quite regularly.
Yeah, is there anything you want to add on Bradley Sowell, Adam?
No, I don't really know enough about breaking down tape to suggest whether he was that great or that bad. I don't think he gave up any, huge Sweezy-esque sacks, so that's a positive. It's quite nice not to be talking about Justin Britt the day after a game.
I thought
he was quite glowing of him. He said he recognised the coverages quite well, and they were very impressed with him and his calling. And it was also something that really stood out to me in Carroll's press conference on Monday, was that he said that Gilliam was jumping across to help out Jamarcus. I'm not sure that was a slip of the tongue, and it was more to suggest that Jamarcus Webb hasn't had the reps that the other guys have had. But the way it sounded was that Gary Gilliam was sort of trying to nurse Webb through the game, which when one of them is paid and the other one isn't, that's not really the way you want it to be.
No, but also I think the game plan up until the last Tuesday was that Webb would be sitting behind Gilliam, not alongside him. So. Mm. I think one short notice that Webb got the game plan swallowed just enough and barely, apart from the Ndamukong Suh's trill on our quarterback. For me, improvements, as I said earlier, you'd expect that Earl Thomas will return to himself. He won't miss as many tackles. He won't let whatever wide receivers 50 yards down deep, he won't just let them walk on by, because Case Keenum probably can't throw it that far. So that's one thing. Elsewhere, I think the O-line, I think Bradley Sowell, you're hopeful to improve by the snaps. Jamarcus Webb, as Adam said, probably the same, because it does look like if Fedi's out for another week, he is in a walking boot from all accounts. But elsewhere, just more the same on defense and everything else. Anyone in particular to watch for the Seahawks on offense, Ross?
Yeah, I think those two running backs, I want to see what the rotation is this week. I want to see Michael Moore, because he looked powerful and dominant when he had the ball, and they want to work rules in more. But also CJ Procise, he got a first down in the first half where he looked really quick. I didn't know he was that quick, catching the ball on third down.
He's got a crack in his hands, so I don't think he'll be getting many carries. I think he'll be more of a catching option for the next couple of weeks. Adam, anyone to watch on offense?
I want to see a few more deep balls to Richardson and Lockett. And I was also really happy for Jimmy Graham to make a big play in the touchdown drive. That was really cool. We are, as a group, I think, huge, huge fans of ATA. And nothing would give me more pleasure than him coming big in this game. He did get a touchdown against the Rams last year, I believe, on opening day.
Yeah.
So it would be really cool if he could replicate that. The process thing is starting to annoy me because he's just been a bit of a sick note since April. And, you know, I'm sure no one in Tharald Simon's rookie year was saying, oh, you know, I wonder if his injuries are going to plague him for 3 or 4 years. But process needs to get on the field and start playing, because otherwise we're going to end up wasting a draft pick. And I know that's silly to say this so soon, but it is a lot of injuries already and a lot of different injuries, which would worry me more.
Yeah, it sounded like Pete Carroll said he went into the game with a crack on his hand, which is why he only got the couple of catches he did get. As you say, Ross, the first one was really impressive. But yeah, you'd hope that eventually that this will pass him by and his body will get used to the nature of the NFL. But
yeah,
it is a bit of concern at this point. For me, on offense, I think you mentioned him earlier, I think Tyler Lockett, this could be the game where he, of course, Thomas on defense, he puts last week to bed all the drop catches and the, it was a fumble, let's be honest.
Yeah.
That's the catch. So, but yeah, I think Tyler Lockett is the one, because as I say, I'm really excited by the prospect of him this year and going on for the next couple of years. I think he might make a decision on another wide receiver that we pay some money to this summer. I think he could curtail his time in Seattle in a couple of years down the line.
Just one more thing on Christian Michael before we move on. I think it was in the fourth down, the fourth quarter, where he made a block, and you were supposed to be on the screenplay, Kristen. Keep running out. Why don't let Wilson hit you on the shoulder pads with the ball? Because you're celebrating your block.
I missed that one. I need to go back and watch.
He ran over to the sidelines. Just, they were laughing at him. The sideline were laughing at him, and he was laughing back at them. Like, yeah, I know, but
he was so proud of his block, he forgot to turn around and catch the block. He probably had 10 yards of space as well, because he probably laid the bloke out as well.
He
turned himself upfield. I imagine he had some running back, some receiver blockers.
They're celebrating, then he said over the guy, like, yeah, get out.
Yeah, but baby steps, Kristen Michael. Baby steps.
Exactly.
Moving on to defense. One to watch, Adam.
One to watch. Jarran Reed was exceptional, as you say, yesterday. And the biggest compliment I could pay him in the whole world is that Brandon Mebane has not even been mentioned once. And typically, when you lose a player like that, you people are making comparisons, but there hasn't been anything. So fair play to him. But now it's a different proposition with Gurley. I do expect that we'll stack the box as often as possible and you know, goad Case Keenum to pass. But Reed against Gurley is going to be a great battle.
Yeah, definitely. I think for someone, as you say, by the Mebane, who was here for, 9-10 years, all the belly dance and all the belly rolls and all that. And as you say, he hasn't been mentioned once on commentary or by coaches or anyone. So Jarran Reed's impact is quick, and hopefully it will continue this week, as you say, against probably one of the top five running backs in the league, even so early into his career. For me on defense, it's Earl Thomas, but more just want to see the same from Shedd and Lane, really, because as you say, Deshaun Shedd played out of his mind. I think Pete Carroll even mentioned how well he played on special teams as well. That's Sherman, he did as well. So seeing that consistency from those two will make decisions elsewhere on the defense a little easier, because we might have to pay him some minimal amounts of money, especially Shedd. I think he's a restricted free agent at the end of the season, so that will be something to watch. Anyone for the Rams of note, Ross? No, let's leave it there. That Los Angeles Rams perfectly. Tavon Austin on Monday night, for those who were lucky enough not to watch that game, had 12 targets and amassed 13 yards. So how is that humanly possible?
I feel I've robbed a fellow Seahawks fan in my fantasy league. I traded him Tavon Austin and got Martellus Bennett, because obviously Gronk's injured.
Yeah, it's Tavon Austin, you've paid the man $30 million or whatever they paid him, and you get 12 targets, which, okay, fair enough, but 13 yards. That is special. That is really, really special from the Rams. Case Keenum looked really proud of himself every time he threw the ball. Looked really set. Then you saw the ball end up in the grasp of a 49ers player. So the Rams, I think you perfectly encapsulated the Rams there. anyone for you, Adam?
Obviously, we're going to have to stop that front seven, but the secondary is poor. So if we can just give Wilson, an extra half second, that can make all the difference. And Tavon Austin, who knows with that bloke? Because normally his stat line against the Seahawks is half a target for 760 yards every game. The guy's like a mixture of Jerry Rice and Marshawn Lynch against us whenever he plays, which is just really annoying. Who knows with the Rams? Because, you could say that none of them would be good, but then equally against the Seahawks, all 53 could be good. They're just a complete enigma. And we just need to take care.
Yeah, this is the week to pick up Kenny Britt in your fantasy league.
But is there any comparison we can make to our English sport that the Rams play up so much when they play the Seahawks compared to how they do 95% of the season? There doesn't seem to be anything like it in any sport that I can follow to any degree. That it just seems to step up.
It's mad. It is Jeff Fisher's issues with the Seahawks.
Yeah, he is the worst. Absolute worst. The
all-time worst.
He was right in Hard Knocks, though, saying they're not going to go 7-9 or 8-8 this year. No, you're going to go back 2-14, probably.
Yeah.
predictions, Ross?
Seahawks win 21-0.
21-0?
Yeah.
Adam?
Seahawks win 24-13.
I've got 26. That's 22-6 or 26-0. I'm not too sure when the next time the Seahawks defense will give up a touchdown, to be quite honest, seeing who we've got the next 2 weeks and how they look.
You've got them on Monday. I know I have. I'm only going to chuck that one up.
League-wide, anything to keep your eye on this week? Obviously, fantasy team is all three of us looking to go 2-0. Adam?
No, I mean, the Patriots continue to just astonish me. It almost doesn't matter who the players are. That's a brilliant win for them. And I could absolutely get used to, for a long time, Arizona and Carolina missing game-winning field goals. That is certainly a league trait that can continue for as long as you guys like it.
Yeah, I mean, for people who do believe in quarterback wins, that the NFC Championship game teams from last year lose to Jimmy Garoppolo and Trevor Siemian in week one 8 months later is that's a good quiz question for further on down the line. Anyone league wise for you, Ross?
The Lions and their offense, they've got terrible defense, but their two running backs and their two wide receivers, they look like they're going to put 40 points up every week.
Yeah, my fantasy team was not happy that it was Theo Riddick getting the 80 yard touchdowns and stuff. For league wide for me, I think Bill Belichick is just, he's an absolute master. How they went into that building and did what they did against a pretty good defense, but they made it look absolutely ordinary.
Yeah.
With an ordinary quarterback, so we just have to wait for the Garoppolo trade to Kansas City in February, like we did with Matt Castle.
It's a popular thing amongst Seahawks fans to hate the Patriots. I don't really know why. I mean, they beat us fair and square in a Super Bowl, unfortunately.
Hmm.
I don't know, people seem to take like the Deflategate thing personally against us, which I don't really understand. As an American football fan, I don't know how you can't just look at the Patriots and just think that is the target and that's what we want to be, and they're just an incredible franchise.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I'm a massive Pete Carroll fan, I think, but he is 1A or 2 to Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick is the best coach in the NFL. He could be an all-timer by the time he hangs up the hoodie and all that. That franchise is so well ran. Even they skirt the rules a few times, obviously, but as you say, Adam, the distaste that some people have for them is a bit bizarre.
Just teams that are more hateable than them. I just don't understand why they get the brunt of it.
All of the NFC East, I hate all of those teams. But yeah, if people point to the cheating issue, just look on yourteamcheats.com. It breaks down the way every single team cheats, and every single team cheats in some way or another.
Yeah, everyone does. Obviously, all the drug suspensions we had for the first couple of years of Pete Carroll have clearly been forgotten, because we lost out on Branagh, and Bruce Irvin cut his hair because he failed a Adderall test or whatever it was back then.
Yeah.
But the Patriots, they're the reason where they've they've been so dominant for so long with such a different supporting cast. I mean, Julie Edelman and Danny Amendola are not one and two wide receivers, but in New England they are, and it works.
Who the hell is Chris Hogan?
Chris Hogan, yeah, exactly. Couldn't get on the field for the Bills last year. Touchdown and a decent performance in week one again for the Patriots.
Exactly. Moving on, any members' questions? Filter into the inboxes, chaps.
I didn't get any personally.
No, Adam?
I got one from a regular listener, Top Trevor, on Twitter saying, do we think this pass rush could rival 2013's pass rush?
Adam, do you want to take that first?
I think the signs are good. The scheming looked pretty impressive to get people like Marsh and Clark into the backfield. The depth that team had was something special, and came partly because you weren't paying that many players. So I think to ask any team to replicate that when you've got seven or eight players on hefty contracts is a lot. But here's hoping that as long as it's better than last year, I'll be happy.
Ross?
Yeah, I think obviously I'm massively high on the Cassius Marsh hype train, but he's listed as a linebacker, but him and Clark as the backup rotations for Bennett and Averill, that's four really very good pass rushers that we can take advantage of all year. And Jaron Reed in the middle, it just looks like a brick wall.
Yeah, I personally think it would be better than it was in 2013. We've got more legitimate pass rushers. I think 2013 you had the big bodies of Red Bryant and Brandon Meebay, and this year you've got Cassius Marsh. He's probably going to play a significant role. Quinton Jefferson looked quite steady on Sunday. And then you've got Frank Clark, who just seems to be ad libbing more than the coaches would like him to at this stage. But he is an absolute force of nature when he times the jump off the snap. Well, he's probably got the highest ceiling of all the guys on there. The depth is close to what it was in 2013, but I think it will be better because they're better players and they are put in better positions because of how good the players behind them are, with Wagner, Wright and all the secondary as well. So it's a good question, but I think they will be better than they were in 2013. Whether we repeat what happened in 2013 as a team is to be seen, but
that'd be nice.
Scored 12 points on opening day that year as well.
Yeah.
It was 12 points we got as well, wasn't it, that year as well, in week one.
Can we quickly give a quick praise for Michael Bennett? No offsides in week one.
No, but there are 16 more weeks, 20 more weeks or whatever, so I'm sure he'll make up for that.
Hey, let's take it one game at a time with this.
Anything else that we want to bring up on this week's pod?
Yeah, just want to congratulate the Washington State Cougars on another excellent season. we wish you all the best for next year. Top work.
I mean, Bruce Arians took in half of the Arizona Cardinals team by name under the bus, was then outmatched by what Mike Leach did on Monday morning. He's thrown the whole school under the bus, the whole culture of the school under the bus. A school that's making him live very handsomely and very comfortably, and he's just thrown the entire culture under the bus. So there's some people who might be listening who are very fond of what's going on there. The 0-2 Cougs have cooged it so quickly this year, as Washington Huskies stand at number 8 in the rankings, and one writer somewhere on the interweb put them in the playoff semifinals against Alabama, so that'll be quite fun to watch on. That'll be quite a fun way to spend New Year's.
Bring them on.
Most definitely. One other thing about internet articles, there was a Bleacher Report article saying that the Seattle concept on defense has been figured out because of how bad and how poor the defenses look in Jacksonville, Atlanta, and Oakland. The one reason for that is that Pete Carroll isn't there. So that is the main point. The defense looks so good here and does not look the same. There's a few people calling out the culture chat that Dan Quinn is preaching in Atlanta as completely false, which is probably accurate because, again, Pete Carroll's not there to back it up. But Pete Carroll's the biggest reason for the success of the defensive scheme in Seattle and not in any of those three places. Isn't it, Ross?
Yeah, definitely. If you just look at the touchdown that Charles Sims scored against the Falcons, where he just caught a ball in the backfield and then just ran past four or five defenders, that wouldn't happen in a Seahawks team.
No, most definitely not. But yeah, I think that's all we have to cover this week on the Possession Podcast. Next week's pod, we will be having our first guest if he gets back from Gothenburg in one piece. And obviously, we'll be reviewing week two's game against the Rams and what all nonsense they managed to cook up against us. And looking forward to week three and back at CenturyLink Field against the 49ers. We might also have time to delve into the interview I did last week at the Birmingham meet with Pam Shepherd, and definitely be bringing to the first Drafting Seahawks of the season with a few requests. If there's any players that you want us to cover and want us to look at with that, then just get in touch with one of us on Facebook or Twitter or whatever platform, and we will look at some possible future Seahawks. Twitter, website, hashtags, Ross, where can you catch us?
Yeah, all of that stuff. You can find us on Twitter at Seahawkers UK. Thank you to everyone that tweeted us about the Drink for Smudge hashtag. It was superb. And even the day after, the post you put up on the Seahawkers website, Stu was brilliant. We are on iTunes if you want to download the podcast from there. If you don't already, please leave us a 5-star rate and review. We have not had any new ones this week. So they all help to push us up those ratings. You can get us on thepedestrianpodcast.podbean.com. And while you're there, if you would see fit to leave us a small little donation, as the following gentlemen have done, we will be greatly appreciative of that. We've had donations this week from Gavin Shepherd, Mark Christiansen Bagley, I hope I'm saying your name right, and Martin Clow. All of that has gone to, we've already paid off the costs for the first couple of months of podcasting, and it's in a little bank account now, ready to buy some prizes or buy some equipment, anything we need to do with it to improve the podcast. So thank you very much.
It's basically going to buy Adam or Jermaine Kearse jersey.
That's what I'm saving it up for, really.
Yeah, definitely. Really do appreciate all the donations that made Mark, Gavin and Martin, was it the other one?
Yes.
Yeah, really do appreciate that. Appreciate all the feedback and listens and all the chat over the weekend with the hashtag on Twitter as well. Just like to thank you once again. Thank Adam and Ross for joining me once again on the Pedestrian Podcast. We will be back with you next week, hopefully seeing the Seahawks at 2-0 and Russell Wilson standing upright on two legs. This has been the Pedestrian Podcast. Thank you very much.
Go Hawks.
Watch the fake.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champions.